Hi guys, I did the following report on New Year's Day for Boxing Day 2012.
New Year's. What's New Year's mean to you? Resolutions or promises of things you want to do? Football gatherings? Family get-togethers? The Rose Parade from Pasadena? Hangovers from New Year's Eve parties? Special foods to ensure good luck in the new year? Or is it watching that ball drop in Times Square? Or is it that song of Auld Lang Syne, though it's an old Scottish tune published by Robert Burns in 1796? It became the anthem of New Year's in 1929. That's when Guy Lombardo publicized it by playing it at midnight at a New Year's Eve bash in New York. And he played it every year after that. He heard it in his hometown of London, Ontario, sung by Scottish immigrants who had come over. Every civilization and culture celebrates a new year, not necessarily at the same time. Many follow the lunar calendar. Others consider the year to start at the end of the harvest or at the beginning of spring. The first New Year's was celebrated at the vernal equinox, 2000 BC, mid-March, in Mesopotamia. The Egyptians, the Phoenicians, and the Persians celebrated it at the fall equinox. The Greeks at the winter solstice. The Romans' calendar began March 1, following the lunar new year, but it was only 10 months long. In 700 BC, they added the months of January and February by decree by the second king of Rome, Numa Pontilius. In 153 BC, the Romans chose January 1 to start the beginning of their civil year. In 46 BC, Julius Caesar, we all know about him, introduced the solar-based calendar with the new year starting on January 1. That's the first time it shows up. In 567, the New Year's celebration was declared pagan and abolished January 1 as the new year. So instead, December 25 was celebrated, or March 1, or March 25, or even Easter. The Celts celebrated Hogmanay with the European custom of first footings, visiting the neighbors on New Year's Day just after midnight, bringing along a lump of coal or shortbread. It wasn't until 1582 that the Gregorian calendar declared January 1 as New Year's. The Catholic countries adopted it immediately, but the Protestants drug their feet a little. The British didn't adopt it until 1752. Up until then, it was always in March. Babylonians were the first to make New Year's resolutions. Early Christians believed that the first day of the year should be spent reflecting on past mistakes and resolving to improve oneself in the new year. In the Netherlands, there were bonfires of old Christmas trees and fireworks to purge the old year. Asians have always believed you must frighten away evil spirits and bring good luck as the new year begins, principally with noise and firecrackers. After all, the Chinese invented fireworks. Other ways of encouraging the evil spirits to go away and stay away is to make sure everything in your house is sparkling clean so that the spirits couldn't nest with all of the dirt. A little like insects, I guess. But cleaning the house from top to bottom has to be completed by January 1, and they usually started on December 25. Because on January 1, you can't work at anything that day, or you forfeit all the luck that you've earned. The cleaning binge includes trashing old clothes and getting rid of unused items. It's a time for brand new beddings and pajamas and slippers. A time for new linens and towels. In cleaning the house, you start at the front door and you pull all the energies inward. Any trash has to be removed out the back door to encourage that kind of flow of the spirits. In Japan, there are Oshogatsu, or renewal parties, on New Year's Eve. It's forget the year parties, to bid farewell to the problems and the concerns of the past year. The Japanese also send New Year's postcards, timed to arrive by midnight on January 1. I didn't know the post office worked that way. So what about food? In Spain, it's good luck to eat 12 grapes at midnight. In Greece, the festival of St. Basil, who was one of the founders of the Greek Orthodox Church, the special food is Vasilopita,
or St. Basil's cake with a silver or gold coin in the cake. The person to get that piece has luck all year. One shouldn't wonder. All across Asia, special foods are prepared to wish long life, and that usually translates into any food that is round, like oranges. In Japan, it is mochi balls made out of freshly pounded rice. In Korea, it's a bowl of rice cake soup. Rice cakes usually are round. They also calculate everyone's age as of January 1. Oh, I wonder if the Asian zodiacal calendar, is that why it's always the year of this or the year of that? Because everybody's age is only done from January 1? But I digress. In the American South, the fortunate food is dirty rice. Well, combining black-eyed peas and rice, or hopping john, black-eyed peas and ham hocks. Eat peas on New Year's Day to have plenty of everything. You know, peas are round as well. Some of those American customs, dropping the ball in Times Square, it began 1907, and the original ball was made of iron and wood. Today it is made of Waterford crystal. It is 6 feet in diameter and weighs 1,070 pounds. Those of us on the West Coast have been watching the Rose Parade on New Year's Day forever. Well, since 1886, that is. One year in the late 1960s, I spent the night camped out on the sidewalk, or maybe it was the gutter, but I was sleeping in a sleeping bag, to watch the parade the next day. And John and Larry Gassman were the color commentators for the parade a couple of times. Now that takes doing. So that's a little history of the celebration. I'd like to dip into a Christmas recording that William Conrad put together for the cast of Cannon, the TV show he was in the late 60s. Here's his take on the 12 days of Christmas.
December 14th. Dearest John, I went to the door today and the postman delivered a partridge in a pear tree. Oh, what a thoroughly delightful gift. I couldn't have been more surprised. I am so wonderfully pleased I can't find the words to express my feelings. With deepest love and devotion, Agnes.
On the second day of Christmas, my true love gave to me two turtle doves and a partridge in a pear tree.
December 15th. Dearest John, today the postman brought another sweet gift from you. Just imagine two turtle doves. I'm delighted at your thoughtfulness. They are absolutely adorable. All my love, Agnes.
On the third day of Christmas, my true love gave to me three French hens, two turtle doves, and a partridge in a pear tree.
December 16th. Dear John, oh, aren't you the extravagant one? Now, really, I must protest. I don't deserve such generosity. Three French hens. They are just darling. But I must insist you're too kind. Love, Agnes.
On the fourth day of Christmas, my true love gave to me four mockingbirds, three French hens, two turtle doves, and a partridge in a pear tree.
December 17th. Dear John, today the postman delivered four calling birds. Now, really, they are beautiful, but don't you think enough is enough? I mean, you're being too romantic, aren't you? Affectionately, Agnes.
On the fifth day of Christmas, my true love gave to me five golden rings, four mockingbirds, three French hens, two turtle doves, and a partridge in a pear tree.
December 18th. Dear John, what a surprise. Today the postman delivered five golden rings, one for every finger. Well, you're just impossible, but I love them. Frankly, the rings are a relief because all of those squawking birds were beginning to get on my nerves. All my love, Agnes.
On the sixth day of Christmas, my true love gave to me 60 surveying five golden rings.
December 19th. Dear John, When I opened the door today, there were actually 6 geese a-laying on my front steps. So you're back to the birds again, eh? Look, John, the geese are fine, but where in God's name am I going to keep them? The neighbors are complaining and I can't sleep through the racket. Will you please stop? Cordially, Agnes.
On the 7th day of Christmas, my true love gave to me 7 songs.
What is with you and these goddamn birds, John? 7 swans are swimming. What kind of a lousy frigging joke is this? There are bird droppings all over the house. They never stop with a racket. I can't sleep at night, and I'm a nervous wreck. It is not funny, John, so stop with the goddamn birds, okay? Sincerely, Agnes.
On the 8th day of Christmas, my true love gave to me 8 pairs of milking, 7 swans swimming, 6...
December 21st. Okay, Buster. I think I prefer the goddamn birds. What the hell am I going to do with 8 maids a-milking? It's not enough with the frigging birds and the 8 maids a-milking, but they had to bring the miserable fucking cows. And they're doing you-know-what all over the lawn. And I can't move around in my own bloody house. It's so crowded. So just lay off, will you, smartass? Agnes. God damn you. What are you? Some kind of a sadist? Now there are 9 pipers a-playing, and Christ, do they play. They haven't stopped chasing those goddamn maids since they got here yesterday morning. And the cows are getting all upset and stomping all over those horrible screeching birds. What the hell am I going to do? The neighbors are starting a petition to evict me. Oh, you're going to get yours, Agnes.
On the 10th day of Christmas, my true love gave to me.
You dirty, rotten son of a bitch. Now there are 10 ladies dancing. I don't know why you call those sluts ladies. They've been bawling the pipers all night long. And now the cows can't sleep, and furthermore, they've developed diarrhea. And my living room and my whole property is a river of shit. And the city commissioner of buildings has subpoenaed me to give cause why the building shouldn't be condemned. I'm sicking the police on you, Buster. One who means it. Agnes. Listen, you miserable bastard. What with the 11 lords a-leaping on all those maids and ladies? Some of those broads will never walk again. And those pipers ran through all the maids and have been committing sodomy for the last 8 hours with the cows. And all 23 of the goddamn birds are dead. They've been trampled to death in the orchard. And I hope you have satisfied, you vicious swine. Incidentally, I just found the words to express my feelings. You rotten, moth-eaten, pig-buggering moron. Go fuck yourself! You sworn enemy, Agnes.
On the 12th day of Christmas, my true love gave to me.
December 25th. Dear sir, this is to acknowledge receipt of your latest gift of 12 fiddlers fiddling that you have seen fit to inflict on our client, Miss Agnes McColdstein. The destruction of our client's sanity has, of course, been total. In the future, all gifts and correspondence should be directed to our attention. If you should attempt to reach Miss McColdstein at Happydale Sanatorium, the attendants have instructions to shoot you on sight. With this letter, please find attached a warrant for your arrest. Cordially, Badger, Bender, and Cahill, attorneys at law.
was from ART's Christmas recordings of 2005.
We all have our favorite Christmas cards. I'm really hard-pressed to pass by the cards with my name on it. I am such a sucker for the ones that say joy, or even joy to the world. I also like the ones that have little fat birds marching behind the leader who's carrying a sprig of holly in his beak, or singing in a choir of fat little robins. You know, they always cheer me up. For some of us, it is the Christmas tree that embodies the spirit of Christmas. Well, the Druids thought so back in ancient times in England. Mine is crowded with decades of whimsical ornaments. In fact, I now have 3 trees each year. A full-size one, which is full, plus one that is full of ornaments picked up during my travels, including boats and planes and cars and trains and, you know, a transportation theme. The other themed tree is really a branch that hangs in front of the window in my bathroom. The ornaments are all from Hawaii. Slippers and gourds, seashells, handmade ornaments like snorkels and flippers, fish, Santa's in Hawaiian leis, all surrounded with a poinsettia lights. As I travel, I don't often find Christmas ornaments. Usually it's because it's the wrong time of year, but I found a way around that. There are keychains wherever you go, and the only thing they need is a hook to be an ornament. They're ready to hang. Paris, Edinburgh, Sun Valley, Whistler Mountain, Montreal, Hawaii, New Zealand, even Texas, you know, all of those exotic places. 'Twas the night before implementation, and all through the house, not a program was working, not even a browse. The programmers hung by their tubes in despair, with hopes that a miracle would soon be there. The users were nestled all snug in their beds, while visions of inquiries danced in their heads. When out in the machine room there arose such a clatter, I sprang from my desk to see what was the matter. And what to my wondering eyes should appear but a super programmer with a 6-pack of beer? His resume glowed with experience so rare, he turned out great code with a bit pusher's flair. More rapid than eagles his programs they came, and he cursed and muttered, and he called them by name. On update, on add, on inquiry, on delete, on batch jobs, on closing, on functions complete. His eyes were glazed over, fingers nimble and lean, from weekends and nights in front of a screen. A wink of his eye and a twitch of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work, turning specs into code, then turned with a jerk, and laying his finger upon the enter key, the systems came up and worked perfectly. The updates updated, the deletes they deleted, the inquiries inquired, and the closings completed. He tested each whistle, and he tested each bell, with nary an abend, and all had gone well. The system was finished, the tests were concluded, the user's last changes were even included. And the user exclaimed, with a snarl and a taunt, "It's just what I asked for, but not what I want."
Christmas in Los Angeles is usually bright and clear. Not everyone has turkey or ham for Christmas dinner, or even duck. Instead, 3 days before the meal, an order is placed for tamales. Have to order early, or else go without. The natives go wild with lawn statuary and lights. Along with Arizona, they put candles in paper bags, which flicker during the nights. Around Green Lake, in Seattle, they also put out candles in bags. For one evening, all around the lake. If you put about a cup of sand in the bottom of the bag, so the candle has some support, it can last for hours. That is, if it doesn't rain. There's nothing sadder than a sodden sack with a barely lit candle in it. However, that doesn't keep Seattleites from walking around in the rain, enjoying the sight. About every third person carries a butane starter to help the candle stay lit. They even decorate their umbrellas with lights. You know the phrase, if you can't fix it, feature it. Walking around the lake, in the darkness, lit only by the flickering candles in the bags, groups of barely seen people will burst into Christmas carols. Dogs, as well as their owners, are draped with Christmas lights. The lake is 3 miles around. There are kids in strollers, and people on rollerblade skates. Some years, everyone stops at Evans Pool and Community Center for hot chocolate as they make their way around the lake. These Christmas thoughts are brought to you by members of the American Radio Theater.
Mom, what's Christmas?
I ain't your mom.
You lick my ears clean.
Well, they're dirty. Now leave me alone. There's a bird I'm watching. Oh, man, you scared it off.
Sorry. If I can't call you Mom, what can I call you?
She calls me Liebchen.
What's a Liebchen?
I don't know. I think she's made it up. Who wants a name that don't mean nothing?
She calls me Mister. Or Silly Head.
Silly Head suits you. Oh, yeah. Shh, don't move now. See? Now that's a bird.
I know what a bird is.
I said don't move.
Besides, there's glass. What's Christmas?
Something people think.
Did you say cheese?
No. How am I supposed to know anything?
You know everything.
I don't know.
How about, cheese?
Shut up.
I know. Christmas is when it's particularly wretched to be outside with wind and rain and sometimes even snow and no tuna fish. It's quite useless.
But Our Lady made Christmas sound nice.
I like cheese.
You haven't been out in years and years. You won't remember.
It's burned into my brain.
Christmas is nice. It's catnip and mint, lots of mint. It's watching snow fall while you sit on the heater. It's the lady coming in all cold and rosy-cheeked and you sitting on her lap to help her warm up. It's a new ball toy. Most of all, it's like cheese.
Cheese? What does cheese have to do with Christmas?
Nothing. Ignore her.
She's a freak.
Cheese makes me happy.
Oh, so Christmas is something that makes you happy?
Uh-huh.
Oh, good gracious.
Then my Christmas is Mom. I mean Liebchen.
Oh, you. Oh, what the hey.
I will not. I refuse. Here's the follow-up, almost the prequel, for Auld Lang Syne from 2009, the first year we did the New Year's impromptu marathon, and the first time of Joni's Welcome to the New Year. A few words about Auld Lang Syne. Well, we've all sung it, usually on New Year's Eve, but where did it come from? What's it all mean? Well, Auld Lang Syne means old long ago, or long, long ago. Ha! Do I hear someone muttering, didn't Robbie Burns write it? Well, you'd be kind of right. And who was he? Well, Robert Burns, or Robbie Burns, was born in Ayrshire, Scotland, January 25, 1759. He is considered Scotland's poet laureate, as well as the poet laureate of all Freemasonry. Yeah, he was one of those guys. He packed a lot of poetry into his short life. He died at the age of 37 in 1796. You know, one of the things I noticed that was barely mentioned in his official biographies was that he was very fond of the spirits. I doubt if there's a pub anywhere in Scotland that Robbie Burns didn't scrawl a poem on the wall in payment for yet another single malt scotch. The Kirk, or Church, of Scotland wasn't too wild about Robbie's casual love affairs either. And you know, in Scotland and elsewhere, Auld Lang Syne is always sung on the celebration of his birthday, Burns Night. New Caledonian societies all across the United States and in Scotland itself celebrate Robert Burns' birthday with Burns Night. It's a dinner and a ceilidh or dance. Let me tell you a little bit about that, because after everyone gathers in the hall, the bagpipes pipe the triumphal entry of the haggis into the hall. Now, we talked about lutefisk. Haggis is all of the unmentionable meats from a sheep, all cut up and cooked in a sheep's stomach. It is traditionally served with a dram of drambuie, or more, a liqueur made from scotch. At the end of the ceilidh, everyone gathers in a circle with their arms crossed in front of them, clasping their neighbor's hand, and singing Auld Lang Syne. At the end of the song, and you know there's five verses that we don't sing, at the end of the song, they raise their arms, rush to the center, and then spin outward, still clasping hands. And that's the official start of the new year. Well, back to the song. In the 1780s, Robbie Burns was collecting folk songs for the Scottish Musical Museum. Auld Lang Syne was one of them with a different melody. He liked the song, smoothed out verses, wrote verses, and put it to a different piece of music. You know, in the Gaelic world, Hogmanay is the last night of the old year, and they had a song that they sang at it. Well, in 1788, Robbie Burns began a campaign to have everyone sing Auld Lang Syne instead. And it was pretty successful. Another tidbit from my research. A young Walter Scott, long before he became a sir, met and admired Robbie Burns. Walter was 16. But, you know, if that was all, we'd be singing it in Gaelic. Here's Howard Culver with Auld Lang Syne performed as a poem.
Should auld acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Should auld acquaintance be forgot and days of Auld Lang Syne? And here's a hand, my trusty fear, and gie's a hand o' thine, and we'll take a right good willy walk for Auld Lang Syne. For Auld Lang Syne, my dear, for Auld Lang Syne, we'll take a cup of kindness yet. For Auld Lang Syne. Lang Syne, my dear, for Auld Lang Syne, we'll take a cup of kindness yet, for Auld Lang Syne.
Something that I wanted to include from the research on Auld Lang Syne being sung in other situations other than New Year's Eve. This is what I read. On the sinking of the Japanese ship Montevideo Maru in World War II, carrying 1,053 Australians, mostly POWs, the Australians in the water sang this for their trapped mates as the ship went down. Surviving Japanese crewman Yoshiaki Yamaji reflected on this moment as realizing what big hearts the Australian soldiers had. I think that's pretty powerful. Now to the case in point. Guy Lombardo's, with his brothers Liebert and Carmen, and Victor came later, started a band in 1919 and called themselves the Royal Canadians. By 1929, they had their first major gig as a headliner at the Roosevelt Grill in New York City for New Year's Eve. Guy took this old Scottish song, Auld Lang Syne, and made it his theme song. His band was billed as the sweetest music this side of heaven. Before we listen to Guy, just a mention of part of the lyrics. As I mentioned, there are five stanzas to Auld Lang Syne, but most of us only sing the first one in the chorus. In the chorus, a cup of kindness was, you guessed it, a cup of single malt scotch. Here's Guy Lombardo and his Royal Canadians.
This is Broadway, the great white way, part of the world's most exciting city, New York. And it's time once again for New Year's Eve with Guy Lombardo. And now from the famous Waldorf Astoria Hotel on fashionable Park Avenue, where New York's glamorous high society celebrates New Year's Eve in the Grand Ballroom, it's the sweetest music this side of heaven, with all the Royal Canadians and Mr. New Year's Eve himself, ladies and gentlemen, Guy Lombardo.
Here's to all you guys, all of us, and Fred, and Gary, and Pat. Well, that concludes my presentation. Sorry I didn't find the one that I must have done on Christmas, because it must have been live rather than a recording ahead of time. You know, sometimes Bob Acosta hits me with these kinds of things a little late in the day. It's not just Luis that does that. Over to you guys. And Ron would like me to apologize for Bill Conrad's contribution, but I wanted to let everybody know what it was. Thanks for listening.
That was priceless. That was Conrad at his best, and I loved every second of it.
That was funny. I'm sorry, but that was...
Wasn't that funny? I felt really sad. I always feel sorry for those six geese a-laying. Five gold rings. That must hurt.
Oh, they got theirs. And I, as I say, I think that was just priceless. That was Conrad at his best. I love that. Yes, and it was funny. And Rick, you're here.
Madam Librarian, do I have that in the many voices of Bill Conrad?
It's not in that collection, Mike, but it might be something else she's got.
I thought you did, but I can always make sure, because obviously I pulled it in for this thing.
I thought I looked in that, but I don't remember seeing it, but I'll look again, because if it isn't there, I'd love to have it, too.
Yeah, well, we all got the collection, and I did go through it, because I culled stuff that I already had, and I know I hadn't heard it until tonight, so I'm sure Joy will find it, though. She's intrepid.
Yeah. If you do, throw it at us, because that's just cool.
Yeah, it had me in stitches, too, Mike. I got to tell you.
Yeah, I thought it was funny, too. I liked hearing him swear and be all angry with all the birds. That was funny.
I heard somebody else do this, a similar kind of thing, but the lady was a woman. I don't remember where it was, but she got just about as upset, although she didn't swear as much. But the tail end of it is always, you will hear from our lawyers. And in her version, she died. She didn't go into a mental institution. She died. And I wonder if that one is the original one, because I know Bill Conrad didn't write this. He just fell into it and just loved it. And that's why he put it together. He gave out records of this recording to all of his friends at Cannon on Christmas night, the Christmas night party.
Yeah. Look what good did him. Look where he is today.
Rick, just for your edification, I have my new mixer in, and this is the new mic set up, and I think it's working.